Hi, I'm Karen, and I'm a sleep practitioner working for Sleepright in Northamptonshire. I'm also a parent of a 14-year-old with Down syndrome who has kept me very sleep deprived over the years.
Hi, I'm Kerry, and I'm a sleep practitioner working in Leeds.
This is the Sleepright podcast. In this episode, we're talking about what is a good bedtime activity.
To find more information and support for families of disabled children, check out the website at scope.org.uk/sleep.
Hi, Kerry.
Hi, Karen. Are you okay?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Hope you are too.
Good.
So today, we're going to be talking about what is a really good bedtime activity, and we'll talk about some examples of that, which would be really helpful to do in the run-up to bedtime within the golden hour. What examples would you have?
I mean, activities within the golden hour, I think, I mean, all depends obviously on the age of the child, the development age of the child, which obviously is an individual thing that we talk to parents about in the assessment. But we try to recommend hand-eye coordination activities to help calm the child. It all needs to go on individual interest, focus and attention time. I often recommend, probably for the younger end children, like a golden hour activity bag or box, an old pillowcase, an old shoe box, getting the child involved in maybe decorating the bedtime hour or bedtime box. And then in that, I ask parents to think of some things that the child's interested in. So sometimes a jigsaw, colouring, posting activity. But what I do say is in the golden hour, only bring that bag or box out in the golden hour. Don't let the children play with all them activities throughout the day and then bring them out at golden hour as well. So again, it starts to develop as an association that when the child sees that visual bag or box, that they know it's part of golden hour and what's leading up after them activities that are chosen in their box.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's a really, really good idea. Quite interesting, actually, because I find that when I do suggest to some parents about doing a bedtime box and to ensure that the children shouldn't have their screens, and this is a replacement for screen time, some parents are quite perplexed and think, well, what on earth will I give them to do, because they live and die for their screens.
Yeah.
And there is nothing else in their lives anymore. And we know that this is society today, and you know, their children are amongst, you know, probably the, you know, the general population. It's the same in every household.
Right.
And some parents are really, really stuck as to what to suggest, because they say, you know, we don't have any games, we don't have anything at all, arts and crafts or anything. So I have suggested in the past that they actually make contact with teacher at school, find out what they do, their free time at school, where, or they're in their art class or anything like that, so that the school can often come up with ideas of what the child actually likes to do in relation to that particular activity, because that the parents isn't even aware of half the time, because it's what the child does at school and they wouldn't associate it with doing it at home. So that could be, you know, a good idea if parents are stuck for ideas. But like you say, it also to ensure that we, whatever we suggest, is age appropriate. And I think it does get trickier as we deal with the older children when we're supporting teenagers.
Yeah.
They are unlikely to want to sit there doing puzzles with their parent or want to do anything with their parents a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I know in my house specifically, Uno is a massive part of the bedtime routine. My son's 14 now, and myself, my husband and my son, we play Uno every night, probably have about 10 games, and it goes down really well. It's lovely and calming. We have the bedside lamps on and we just play Uno. And you can play any kind of card games, anything like that. You could do colouring. Even if you're a teenager, you can look at the mindfulness colouring.
Yeah.
And I've had parents who will sit with their teenagers and they've all got a book each.
Yeah.
And they've got their felt tips. And they use that also. They find, they also think it's a great time to actually chat about the day. And maybe also use that as a time for their child to maybe offload, because what we don't want them to do, of course, is keep that until they actually get into bed, because then that can be detrimental to their sleep quality.
I think the activity that we do recommend is, depending on the child's age, is like
absolutely
parking your worries, or a worry monster, or a worry jar, or definitely something that can clear their mind into a positive.
Yeah, and I do know that we are going to be covering that in a separate chat later about bedtime anxiety. So I know that the ladies there will have some amazing ideas to support that. So I think with the bedtime activities, I think as we know, we can come up with a variety of things. It's all age dependent. It's all developmental dependent as well, because we have to focus around the actual development age of the child.
And I think it's individual, isn't it, as well? Because for instance, we recommend sometimes if a child likes to build Lego, the 30-day Lego challenge that's all over the internet, some children, the parent then sets them a Lego challenge in their golden hour bag or box to build a Lego challenge every night. Now, some children wouldn't tolerate that because if it was too advanced for them or it broke, it could cause a bit of a meltdown. So then the Lego would, it'd end height, and then that child's, obviously they wouldn't be calm going to bed. So I always say to parents that I support, do they like Lego? Yes, they do. But what happens if it breaks, or, and so it'd be through the window or wherever. So then we sort of say, well, let's not have it in the bedtime hour, because, and again, it's a game of competitiveness as well. If you've got a child that's competitive and wants to win and they end up losing, is that going to cause upset and anger?
Yeah, absolutely.
So not having something like that in the bedtime routine that's going to cause any upset.
Yeah. Anger. And of course, we've also got to consider our children who maybe have an ADHD diagnosis, who may be very hyperactive and can't sit and do any calming activity. So what would you suggest for the children who need to be kept active?
And that is a fine line, isn't it? So we're not expecting them to sit still, because we can't, and they can't because of their ADHD diagnosis. But we do need to think of activities, again, individual for that child, that maybe we can still calm the brain. So I think if the bath, like, can be as an activity in the bedtime routine to, and it calms them, to have that to start off with. I recently worked with an 8-year-old with ADHD, and bath with Epsom salts was calming them. Then they got out and started to read it. Mum was really surprised at how calm they was after the bath to introduce something like reading that they hadn't done previously.
And you've also got to think as well about the children who are very sensory seeking, who sitting down doing a puzzle is not going to cut it for them at all. They need to have some stimulating activity almost to help them.
So obviously things like that, I think I often recommend like proprioceptive activities. And we say to parents, it doesn't need to just be done in the golden hour, the proprioceptive feedbacks. So if they're getting rolled up in a rug or like the peanut ball over them, that could be helping the child self-regulate still, I would say. So it is classed as an activity. But what we need to do, again, it's a fine line, because we don't want to over stimulate them to be hyper getting into bed.
No. I recently worked with a young child who actually had a sensory swing in his bedroom. And first of all, when mum told me, I was worrying that you know, that would be too much before bed. But actually what she was doing quite rightly is allowing him to have that as part of his bedtime routine, but then actually hooking it up so he couldn't use it once she'd said goodnight and left the room. And it's worked brilliantly. So anything along those lines can work really, really well.
Yeah.
So I think we've given a variety of examples there. I mean, the list is not exhaustive. We can go on forever. And we very much learn from parents day by day for their suggestions. So I think
and it's all individual learning curve.
Yeah.
And I just think it's if we can try and calm as much as possible, that's what we need, is the body and their brain calm to that individual child's need to be getting into bed to fall asleep.
I hope you enjoyed our podcast today. Our Sleep Right service, like all services at Scope, are only made possible by the generous donations of our supporters. Thanks to them, we're able to be there for disabled people and their families when they need us, and to work towards a society where all disabled people enjoy equality and fairness. If you'd like to help us continue this vital work, you can make a donation or set up a regular gift today. Simply visit scope.org.uk/donate. Or call us for free on 0808 800 3333. We're open from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays and from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekends and bank holidays. Thank you for your support.